Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Collector's Compass, the official podcast of Collector's MD, where we explore the intersection of mental wellness, intention, and collecting. I'm your host, Alex Efron, and today's episode is a special one. We're joined by Taya Kim, a licensed marriage and family therapist based in Los Angeles, who not only brings clinical expertise in areas like anxiety, burnout, and life transitions, but also has a personal connection to the hobby and the struggles that can come with it. Whether it's stress, compulsive spending, or that feeling of being stuck chasing something that no longer brings joy, Taya has worked with clients to reconnect with themselves, set healthy boundaries, and find clarity in their day-to-day lives. Today, we're going to talk about how therapy can help collectors rediscover purpose, how to navigate emotional burnout, and how we can all define our traits, like confidence and balance, with more intention. So if you've ever felt overwhelmed by the hobby, or you're just curious about how mental health and collecting intersect, this is a conversation you're not going to want to miss. So let's get into it. Before we dive in, I just want to properly introduce today's guest. Like I said, Taya Kim is a licensed marriage and family therapist based out of Los Angeles. She's not only a skilled clinician who works with individuals and couples navigating anxiety, burnout, and life transitions, but she also brings a culturally attuned lens to her work, which is important in the context of things like identity, family dynamics, and mental wellness. And what makes this episode even more special is how it came to be. Taya actually reached out to me in Collectors MD after coming across the work that we've been doing in the hobby space. She shared that she's seen some of this same patterns firsthand, the financial stress, the compulsive behavior, the identity struggles, all of the things that we always talk about, sort of show up in her own circle, and felt really compelled to get involved. So let's start right there. Taya, what inspired you to reach out, and what stood out to you about the work we're doing at Collectors MD?
Yeah, so I actually had no idea that there was, I would call it like a support group, a very like safe support group for collectors. And so for me, this is kind of like a new space. I didn't really know about it until like a family member of mine, and I think for a lot of people during COVID, really got back into this hobby and collecting. And so initially I was like, oh, great. Like, this is something that you can do, especially like since the world was locked down. You had to also find community, maybe even like connect with people that don't live in the same area. And so I saw that it was a great place to like build that network, feel like understood, find people who have the shared, you know, shared hobby as you. But then I also saw how it started to get a little bit, I could kind of see the addicted personality come out, where people were again, family members kind of hiding things, how much they were spending, how much they were ripping, what they were doing. And so I was like, okay, people need to get supported in this area too. Like, are you still having fun in the hobby? Are you still enjoying what you're collecting? Or has it become something that like you feel very addicted to? You can't stop. It's compulsive. And then so I found this actually through a family member. And then I looked through your phone and I was like, oh, this is really amazing. And even he spoke out about how he, you know, a space like this is really needed for this community. And so I was like, okay, maybe there's something that I can lend to this place. Also, like, I've been to shows and stuff, again, just because I have family members that are interested in it. And I love the atmosphere. But then again, like, I don't know if these people are struggling or, you know, they are holding a lot of shame being in this hobby. And I would want people to enjoy it and find better balance. And so, yeah, I reached out and I love the work that you're doing. It is really cool.
Well, thank you so much for saying all that. It really means a lot. And it's really gratifying when somebody with, you know, a professional background who is already helping people as part of what they do, you know, reach out and just share their support and, you know, their interest in helping and contributing to a better and safer hobby space. That's what it's all about. It's you know, taking a step back, taking personal inventory, self-reflecting, and making sure that you're proceeding with your habits, your spending habits, your hobbies, and you know, your life, your lifestyle in a more intentional and healthy way. So again, it really means the world that you know, you have seen us, you found us, and you're now part of the community. And so with that, I'd love to learn a little bit more about your own sort of origin story in therapy and what inspired you to enter the field.
Yes, actually, coming out of college, I actually did a lot of work with children for a long time, children and families. And so I did enjoy that work, but then I wanted to work with, I guess, more adults, because even though I worked with families, I didn't get to really support them individually. And then so I kind of did my own self-discovery. I started seeing a therapist. I unearthed a lot of kind of my own emotional blocks, worked through that. And then I realized, oh, like, this is a very transformative space. Also, I've never had such a safe space where I can just kind of talk about everything that's on my mind, everything that I'm feeling. And so I was like, okay, this is something that I might be interested in. So then I transitioned from just strictly working with kids to going into grad school. And then I actually graduated grad school right when COVID hit. And then so even that process was a little bit crazy. But then, yeah. And then since then, maybe I've been in practice for about like 4 years now. And so it's been, it's been really fun. Yeah. And then I just transitioned to my own private practice beginning of this year. So
congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you.
Awesome. And you mentioned you're seeing a little bit of sort of the burnout, the emotional, the mental and the financial burnout amongst your clients or amongst your patients. Are you having conversations with folks about collecting specifically, about the hobby, about the gambling like mechanics that we're seeing? Are people coming to you saying that it's stressing them out? Like, have you already identified patterns in clients before learning about Collector's MD?
Well, I work with a lot of like high achieving individuals, and I would say a lot of people in the collecting space also could be identified as high achievers, right? Especially if I'm thinking about people who are like, I don't know about maybe like status per se, but like maybe you're known as a guy who's like ripping all the time, who's spending big money. There's like the status that you want to keep upholding, but then in the back, maybe you're struggling financially, like you don't even have the money. Maybe you're taking, I don't know, more credit out. And so like I've seen that in my like own clinical work. And so, high achieving individuals who are experiencing burnout, again, whether it be like living up to status or like, I need to constantly achieve this thing, kind of like a high, maybe it's at work, like I need to get that promotion, but then I'm like burning myself out. I'm working overtime all the time. I don't have space for anything else. And I think that also translates again into the hobby space where people want to keep chasing that high. Now you're neglecting other things in your life to just get that high. And then, you know, relationships or even your own personal well-being kind of fall behind. And so I've seen clients that also present like addictive personalities, maybe not collecting per se, but maybe they are collecting other things. Maybe that's just not cards or memorabilia, but yeah, like I've seen that present in my clinical sessions with my clients, and I try to kind of help them figure out what is actually going on beneath the surface. I think we all like to collect, whether it be items, maybe even relationships, food, whatever it might be, but it's also realizing what is driving our need to collect these things.
Right. So, yeah, those are all really good points. It's something I like to talk about quite a bit. You know, I think with many collectors, especially in these spaces, like sports cards, sneakers, watches, memorabilia, even like luxury items like handbags, you know, they require you to spend a lot of money. And so inherently, a lot of the people that are involved in those activities and hobbies are high achievers by nature. They're often professionals, they're entrepreneurs, or, you know, creatives who are used to setting goals, solving problems, and pushing themselves in other areas of their life. So with that drive often comes, you know, I think disposable income, the financial means to indulge in their passions without necessarily needing to justify every single purchase. But I think where it becomes a little bit dangerous is that mix of ambition, access, independence. You know, it can be a double-edged sword, right? Mm-hmm. What starts as rewarding escape or nostalgic, or what starts as a rewarding escape or nostalgic hobby can so quickly spiral into compulsive spending, emotional chasing, and blurred boundaries because you know, these individuals are so used to performing well and controlling outcomes, they may have a harder time recognizing when something, you know, has crossed the line. And unlike some more traditional forms of addiction, collecting often hides in plain sight. That's something we address quite a bit. You know, things that are masked as like an investment or a business, or it's just a hobby that's rooted in childhood nostalgia, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's why conversations around mental clarity, intention, and support are so incredibly important in this space, especially for people who are used to doing it all on their own. And, you know, another quick point I want to bring up that you mentioned, you know, one of the most, I think, misunderstood aspects of addiction, whether it's, you know, substances, alcohol, gambling, or even like, you know, compulsive collecting, is that it, you know, it only affects people who are reckless, irresponsible, or lacking self-control, right? In reality, I think many of the people who struggle with addiction are actually incredibly intelligent, and they're driven, and they're thoughtful. In fact, it's often like those with the sharpest minds, I think, and the deepest internal sort of worlds who are most susceptible. You know, they're thinkers, they're planners, they're achievers, they're people who, you know, kind of want to navigate the pressure, set big goals for themselves and show up for others. But that same sort of mental intensity can sometimes turn inward, especially when life feels, you know, uncertain at times or unmanageable. And I think addiction in general can, like, you know, it can become a coping mechanism for people, you know, ways to find control, relief, or even like a temporary sense of identity in, times of chaos or, you know, confusion. And in, you know, collecting spaces specifically where the behavior is often celebrated or monetized, it can become a lot harder to spot when someone's crossed the line, right? So that's why support and awareness are so crucial, not because these individuals are broken necessarily, but because even the strongest minds need space to be vulnerable, self-reflect, and heal in community, not in isolation. So, you know, at Collectors Envy, we see all of this all the time. You know, brilliant people with good hearts, good intentions, good heads on their shoulders, but they just need the right kind of support to reconnect with themselves and sort of reshape their relationships with the hobby.
Yeah, I love what you just mentioned. I think it's also a lot of times you might feel lost and then you don't know who to turn to. I think especially those that are high achieving, those, a lot of people are like very brilliant. They're very introspective, but I think there's also a lot of shame that comes with it. It's like, oh, I shouldn't be the one that's addicted to this thing, or I shouldn't be the one that's like throwing all this money to chase this high. And I think there's a lot of shame that keeps you from like reaching out. And so again, I love the space that you created. I think Thank you. Just being like very stereotypical, also from what I've seen, like going to these like shows, and I've been to some pretty big ones, like Nationals, I think, and Fanatics. I went this year and to New York.
The Nationals started yesterday.
Oh, did it? Okay. Yeah. So I've been to some of these really big places, events, and then, you know, just to be stereotypical, it is more male driven. And I think, again, there's a stereotype with males that like, oh, we don't really want to talk about what's going on, you know, or maybe you have the mentality that like, I can fix this. I can figure it out myself. However, I think that kind of mindset also kind of digs you deeper into this. And so, again, I love the space that you created. Thank you so much.
We really appreciate that. It is a male driven industry, but it is so important to have a woman's perspective. You're actually the second woman who has been a guest on our show. We also had a collector and a supporter named Maya join us a few episodes ago, and she just really embodies all of the things that we talk about at Collectors MD, and just does such a great job of articulating, you know, how she collects with purpose and with clarity. And she's young. She's only 18. She's just going into college, and she's just so wise beyond her years. So it was just such a refreshing, you know, conversation and opportunity again to get a female's perspective. So, you know, really looking forward to learning more from you. And
this podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know, when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself, talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
And, you know, about your journey and how, you know, you can contribute to this community. So with that said, how is your personal journey with, or how has your personal journey with mental health and coping mechanisms informed the way you practice today?
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing for me and what I gained from my own personal therapy was how I was emotionally blocked. So I never thought I was an anxious person. I was like, oh, there's no way. Like, I can just push through. I'm totally fine. However, through therapy, I realized, oh, like, I am dealing with a lot of anxiety. However, I am hiding it, whether it be in my body or some of the things that I do. So like kind of with collecting too, I used to be like an impulsive spender, and that was me masking my own anxiety. I was chasing like a very quick high. I'll just go buy something that I don't even need, but in that moment I feel really good. And then maybe like an hour later when I check my bank account, I'm like, oh, I don't feel that great. However, now I don't feel good. I want to go chase that high again. Right. So then I also was stuck in that cycle, didn't realize I was stuck in that cycle until I was like, okay, this is becoming a problem where I have to stop doing things that I actually enjoy doing because I have to be more financially like aware of like where my spending is going. And so, you know, learning to identify this cycle, what is happening, becoming aware of that helped me then make some steps to move away from that, finding like healthier coping mechanisms to try to come out of that. Then also I learned to become more aware of my emotions. So again, instead of like going out there to go spend money to try to like mask what I'm feeling, sitting down with myself, okay, asking, what am I actually going through? Are there things in my life that, you know, I'm unhappy with or I'm uncomfortable with? And this is why it's driving me to go out there and go seek that temporary high. And so, you know, I've learned to kind of work through all of that. And then for me, because I'm a problem solver too, like through therapy, I found very tangible tools to use to help me. And so, you know, there are different types of therapy. And for some people, it might be about like, hey, like thinking about what do you want to achieve in your future? How can we get to that? Like I, for myself, really having very clear direction. Okay, hey, this might mean like when you have that desire to go by, you're going to set a timer for 5 minutes, let your anxiety kind of work through itself. And then once it's calmed down, ask yourself again, do I need this thing? Okay, now this is something I can actually do and try. And so I implement that in my therapy sessions with my clients. And I think that's what they really like about working with me is that we set very clear goals in therapy. And we set very clear ways to achieve that goal. And then we work together to achieve it. And I'm like there to support them. We adjust as we go. But yeah, and I feel like that could be really helpful for people in this hobby space too, right? Because sometimes you feel like you're just spiraling. I don't know how to stop. Maybe it's like that late night, no one is up. Now you're like in a break, right? But no one's keeping you accountable. I don't know how to stop myself from going deeper into this. But okay, I think therapy could be a really great place to first identify where you're struggling and then figuring out what can you do in those late hours to not get you to that place again.
Right. It's about setting personal limits, boundaries, guardrails, having the self-control to prevent yourself from, you know, winding up in those vulnerable situations that we so often see. And I think you brought up another really good point. And this is something that I talk about, you know, as well as the sort of leader and the person who founded Collectors MD. I think it's absolutely critical that the people who are leading the charge, whether it's through, you know, advocacy, recovery, education, or community support, have experienced in some capacity the addiction or the compulsive behavior. You mentioned compulsive or impulsive spending themselves, right? And here's why. I think lived experience creates real organic understanding, right? It's one thing to study addiction or speak about it, you know, sort of academically, but it's another thing to have felt it or experienced it firsthand. So to know what it's like to lose track of time chasing the next dopamine hit, to justify behaviors you swore to stop, to, you know, actually know what it feels like to experience that crash or the shame or the emptiness afterward and still go back the next day. That level of insight cannot be taught, right? It can only be lived. So when a leader has been there, they speak the language. They know the mental sort of gymnastics, the emotional highs and lows, the hidden struggles behind closed doors. That connection is what builds trust. It tells others, you know, I see you because I am you. I've lived what you're talking about. And there's a way through this. There's a light at the end of the tunnel. It also just makes the overall mission, I think, a lot more authentic because, you know, so much of this hobby is driven by things like ego, money, and performative leadership. But when someone leads from a place of personal truth and vulnerability, it you know, sort of cuts out all of the noise and it centers the conversation, not just on the profit or the image, but on healing, integrity, and responsibility, which you know, are all core foundations of Collectors MD. So at Collectors MD, everything we do is rooted in lived experience. We're not preaching from a podium. We're not, you know, acting like we have all the answers or we have it all figured out or that I'm recovered. We're walking beside you. We're in this together because, you know, you've wrestled with the same things that we have. And that's what makes this different. And that's what makes this real. So to have somebody like you who has the, you know, the professional expertise and the background to help people, paired with the fact that you've actually experienced a lot of these things yourself, I think is just so incredibly invaluable.
Yeah. And I think, again, that's why I appreciate the space that you've provided, because, again, I wouldn't feel safe to maybe go into a space that people have never experienced. Right. And so here you have people that are going through the same thing. And now I feel like I can trust the group. And so, again, the fact that you brought this space together, I'm going to assume you kind of struggled with this, hence the reason why this was kind of
crazy, I did.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why I said everything I just said. You know, people ask me all the time, you know, how could you possibly start something like this when you've struggled with addiction, you've struggled with the compulsive behavior yourself. And, you know, I think if Collectors MD was created, you know, in a vacuum by like a corporate entity, it just wouldn't carry the same tone, right, the same authenticity.
Right.
That it does, because I'm leading the charge. And I always tell everybody in our weekly meetings, in my daily reflections across the community, that I'm on the same playing field as everybody else. Mm-hmm. I'm not here and the rest of you guys are here. I don't have all the answers. I am still in the thick of it. I am recovering myself. I understand and acknowledge that addiction, gambling addiction, even alcohol and narcotic addiction, which thank God I'm, you know, I haven't had struggles with in my life, but definitely the gambling and the collecting, you know, I've acknowledged that it is a lifelong commitment. I'm going to be recovering for the rest of my life. And so that's a huge reason why I wanted to dedicate my life and ultimately, like, you know, my career into this space, into helping other people. Yeah. It's just so incredibly important, and it's been the missing link for far too long.
So
with that, you know, I did do a bit of digging and research, and I really appreciate you sharing some of your profile links ahead of our conversation. You emphasize both compassionate care and direct feedback. What does that balance look like in your sessions?
Yeah, I mean, compassionate care first, that like you're coming to therapy, being vulnerable with me, and that you're probably struggling with the same things that I'm going through. And that, you know, there's this like mutual understanding that, like you said, right, I'm no better than you. If anything, I'm just lending you an ear to listen. And so there's that. I have a lot of compassion for my clients because I don't see them. I really don't see them as broken. If anything, maybe they're just a little lost. And then so we're trying to help you find yourself again, find your purpose. And then with that, like the direct feedback, going back to what I said, I like to present very tangible, actionable tools for my clients. Because sometimes, again, if I told you like, hey, just go out there, take some deep breaths, let's just see how it goes. Sometimes that doesn't resonate with me. I don't really know what that means. Okay, after I take some deep breaths, maybe I still feel this need to go buy this thing, chase this high. What do I do then? And so, again, the direct feedback comes in where it's like, okay, when you feel that, now you're going to do these next steps. Let's see how this works for you.
Sure.
So I really love combining both of those things and kind of going to like what kind of modalities I use. That's a little bit more like solution focused therapy, which I love, which just means that like, we're going to set goals for you for the future. Okay. In like a month, what do you want to achieve? Oh, maybe I want to go into 5 less breaks. Maybe I go into 10 every month. Now I want to go into 5. Okay, that's the goal that we have set for you for this month. What can we do to go achieve that? What is that going to look like? And so that's kind of like the direct feedback that I provide.
Awesome. That's I think, incredibly helpful for a lot of people, and a unique combination that, you know, isn't necessarily always accessible through therapy. So I appreciate that. So with that, how do you define success in your work with your clients?
Good question. I think it's when maybe in one session they say, hey, I was in an anxiety spiral, and then I did that one coping mechanism we talked about, and for 10 minutes, I felt better. And I'm like, great, that's a win. Yeah. We're going to try to build on that. However, I think success also looks like, hey, they come to me and they tell me, hey, I actually wanted to do this thing and I couldn't. And I fell back on my old habits. Well, I still see that as success because now you've become aware. You're acknowledging, you know, some of the difficulties you're having, and you're coming back, being vulnerable, and telling me that, hey, I want to work on this again.
Yeah, totally. I think the small victories are everything, you know, especially in recovery or when trying to change a deeply ingrained pattern. Right. They act as like proof that change is possible. So whether it's just like a one-off where you're resisting an impulse purchase one time, right? Mm-hmm. Or showing up to one support meeting, or just, you know, simply becoming more aware of a trigger. These small moments may seem minor, but I think they're actually massive, and they really add up, right? Because it's not about flipping a switch overnight. It's not about finding all the answers, like, you know, in one meeting. It's about building trust with yourself one decision at a time. And each small win is sort of a brick in the foundation of long-term growth. And when you're struggling, sometimes I think just getting through the day is a victory worth celebrating.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. So I'm going to transition over to our next topic, which is sort of the crossover between the hobby and mental health. Mm-hmm. So my first question is, what specifically drew you or to reach out to Collectors MD? I know you found us through a family member, but what, you know, made you email me?
Again, I think realizing that a space like this is needed, again, seeing like family members late into the night, staying up all night, even though they have work the next day, hiding some of these things, I was like, okay, if you're not going to speak to me, maybe it'll be helpful if you can speak to other people that are going through the same thing. However, are people actually talking about this, or are they talking about like the car that they got, or like this high that they chased, but they're not talking about the in between, the gray areas where you're feeling anxious, you're struggling. And so again, like when I came across your site and what you're doing, I was like, oh, this is really great. And I also love that you have a weekly group meeting where people, it sounds like it's very organic. People can kind of join in as they want, and it's not like a commitment, like, or it sounds like that. That's very organic.
That's spot on.
Okay. Yeah. And I think that's needed, because maybe I'm not there yet to go seek more long-term help, but I want to find a group where I can just even hear about what people are struggling with, know that I'm not alone. And I love that, again, you have this space for people to go in. I think also you offer anonymous like joining too. Yeah, which is great, because again, maybe I'm still working through the shame that like I'm dealing with this. And so again, having that space, and then also going back to finding the joy in the hobby, I also see how much like fun it is for people, like in a way, especially for adults who have gone back to finding this hobby. We, as adults, we kind of lose like that childlike joy, that excitement. Right. And I do think the hobby brings that. Maybe you remember the first box you broke or the first pack you ripped when you were like 10 and you rediscovered in your 30s. Like, I would want you to still have that kind of enjoyment, because adult life can be really hard.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know, when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself, talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
It could be really routine and monotonous, and so I wouldn't want anybody to lose that. But again, you have to find a good balance for that, right? And so again, I feel like your space is trying to create that for people. Hey, I don't want you to leave this hobby. I don't want you to leave this space, but I want you to feel like good about doing it. Find really good boundaries so that you can balance your personal life with the hobby.
100%. That was so well said. And yeah, I mean, before Collectors MD, there really wasn't a space in the hobby for people to talk openly and honestly about the emotional, the mental or financial impact of collecting, especially in a way where they could feel safe and judgment free. Right. So our weekly meeting started organically. Like you said, it's just a handful of us connecting and supporting one another. And they've grown into something truly meaningful, something that I think people look forward to. Yeah. And like you said, people can join anonymously as well. It's not just for those struggling with addiction too. Mm-hmm. Some people join simply just because they want to collect with more intention, more clarity, and a deeper sense of purpose. So wherever you are, wherever you are in your journey, you're welcome here. You're welcome to join us. And, we accept any and all people who just want to make this space healthier and more intentional for all of the participants. We actually are hosting our 14th consecutive meeting this evening as well. So a good opportunity to plug that. We do have a Google form that you have to fill out. It's very straightforward. You could find it on our socials, on our website. But all you have to do is basically just answer a few preliminary questions, provide us with your email address, and we add you to the meeting. No strings attached. It's completely free. You don't have to attend every single meeting. You can keep your camera off. You can use a nickname and remain completely anonymous. We always say listening is just as powerful as sharing. So again, wherever you are in your journey, we welcome you. So from your perspective, from your lens, what psychological patterns or challenges show up in collectors who feel overwhelmed or stuck?
What psychological challenges?
Yeah, or what psychological patterns or challenges?
Well, I think, people who are stuck in the hobby, right?
Yeah, just people, who might feel that sense of, I'm a little bit overwhelmed or, a little bit out of control with my intentions, things like that.
I think the biggest, or not the biggest, I think there are a few things. So I think first, like the building of shame, maybe you feel more and more ashamed. Also your spending habits start becoming it starts increasing. Maybe you're maxing out your credit cards. And you're trying to also struggle to find money elsewhere just so you can go spend it in collecting or breaking or in the hobby space. What else? Oh, relationships falling apart slowly. Again, because you're holding a lot of shame. You're probably keeping this a secret. And so now you have less time for the people you care about. So maybe you're married, your spouse gets starting to get agitated because you're not really paying attention to your spouse because you're paying so much attention to this thing. And so I think those are a few things. Maybe also feeling really anxious, every time maybe you have a free time, you're looking at another break you can enter, or even on eBay, right? All the bidding things, you're constantly on your phone trying to check okay, can I go get this thing? I think those are a few signs that you might be kind of stuck in a very negative loop with the hobby.
Yeah. Yeah. There are definitely a lot of warning signs and red flags that we talk about. I think quite a bit as it pertains to, not just collecting, but addiction in general, and they're not just for people to look out for themselves, but also for family members and loved ones. It's really important to keep people in check, and maybe not necessarily be on top of them all the time or be too overwhelming, but if you have a loved one or a spouse or even a friend who is involved in the hobby and you see them overspending or doing things just hiding or minimizing things, downplaying how much time or money they're spending. They have, mood swings or, feeling the need to just spend more, keep chasing, neglecting responsibilities, difficulty stopping. These are all warning signs that I think are really important to, acknowledge. And it's not to say that you have a problem or you have an addiction. There's no shame in it. We just want people to sort of recognize the signs that can potentially come up as a first step toward building a healthier, more intentional relationship with the hobbies.
I just want to say I also like what you mentioned. I think another thing is like you could become more agitated, maybe short, not only with yourself, but the people around you. Again, because you are dealing with a lot of things, you understand in the background, like, hey, I just spent like another $1,000 that I don't have. And then now someone's asking me, hey, could we go out for lunch? Well, now I'm irritated. I can't spend that money, but I do want to do this thing. And so I think those things present. And then also, I think, like you said, you're mentioning like loved ones that are around the person who's struggling. Like, it is also hard for those people to like support them because they're keeping this a secret, right? So kind of going back to like, how do you also break this cycle? I think one of it is becoming honest and vulnerable, letting your secrets out to a loved one, to somebody who can support you, so that you're not like stuck in the shame cycle continuously. Someone's going to help you realize, okay, when this person is acting like this, maybe they're struggling. Maybe they spent a little bit more money than they wanted to. Okay, how can I go support them? What do they need from me? And so again, especially with like family members or like partners or whatnot, I do think they need to be part of the narrative for the person who is struggling.
So true. Yeah. And we invite people who might be a family member or a friend to join our meetings too, just to get a sense of like what's going on. You know, in Gamblers Anonymous and alcohol, I know Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a program called Gammonon and Al-Anon, and it's basically for loved ones, for spouses, for individuals who are coping with, you know, living through these experiences with an individual who's addicted, and people come together and talk about what they're going through and how they cope and how they manage a lot of these stresses. And so we're not there yet in terms of creating like an exclusive group just for those people, but I think it's important for those people to have a space to go to as well. And right now, you know, we welcome them with open arms. So, you know, we already kind of talked about a lot of the warning signs. There's the dopamine loops, the avoidance, the identity seeking, the chronic stress that plays into, you know, these collecting compulsions. So I think we can sort of table that question. But in regards to the collecting space and, you know, the hobby, not just necessarily for sports cards or TCG, but also some of these other categories, the sneakers, the watches, the NFTs, even like the toys, like Labubu is like this big craze now, right? Like, you see it all the time across different cultures, just throughout the world, where these sort of fads pop up and become just mega popular for a short stint. Why do you think these sort of activities or behaviors are so often overlooked when it comes to clinical mental health services?
Oh, that's a great question. And you're right. I do think it's overlooked. No one's like judging them. However, if someone's like spending hours at a casino gambling, it's like, oh, this person has a problem. But people can be waiting hours to get the latest drop of like a sneaker or even like a Labubu, right? And so I don't know. I think it's just socially acceptable in that like, hey, obtaining a material, like a tangible item is not bad. Like, why not? And maybe there's like status attached to it. Like all of us want to appear that like, hey, I have the latest thing. This makes me feel good. And again, I think culturally and socially, we've kind of accepted that. We kind of praise and look up to people who have the latest trendy thing versus again, right? Somebody who's like struggling with like alcohol or gambling. It's like, oh no, those are like degenerate things. I think we've already labeled that as such. But you're right. I think it's kind of the same. It's kind of the same thing here, right? Like,
No, I mean, I think the status of, like you mentioned, the status of having something that's hard to obtain lends itself to the addictive behavior. I also think the influencers and creators have a huge impact on the way people consume things and how they go about, you know, their choices. And that can be dangerous too, especially for young people who are extremely vulnerable and impressionable. And so we talk a lot about that, just in terms of how there's so much predatory behavior in the hobby and how people take advantage of those that are vulnerable and susceptible to these sort of addictive behaviors and patterns. So we just have to be really careful. We have to educate people, the next generation, but also the parents of young individuals who are susceptible to this sort of behavior is so incredibly important. So through our tools and resources, we offer a number of different things that I think parents can take advantage of. Things like a hobby dictionary, which is pretty comprehensive. If you check it out, it basically just lists all of like the key buzzwords that people are using. Yeah. And like, it's not to, tell people like you have to like study this and memorize every single term. But, these days, the next generation, Gen Z, Gen Y, everybody's talking about, what generation's after Gen Z? Gen Alpha?
I think it's Gen Alpha, yeah.
Gen Alpha, sorry, Gen Z, Gen Alpha. They're all these like, it's like they have their own language. And I think it's like that with every generation. But it gives parents an opportunity to sort of understand a little bit more about like what their kids are talking about. Context is so important. So we already kind of covered working with high achieving and anxious clients. So we don't have to spend too much time on this segment, but I do want to ask you, going back to that topic, how do you help someone shift from sort of achievement-based self-worth to something that's a little bit more grounded?
Well, I think first we got to identify that if it's achievement-based self-worth that you're chasing, you're probably never going to get there. Because once you achieve that one thing, you're going to go look towards the next thing. And I think this is pretty common. Even if you look at like billionaires, those that we feel like have made it, aren't they always also searching for the next thing?
Right.
I don't think it ever stops. Right.
It's so all relative.
Right. And then you kind of hear about like people who have it all that then go do something kind of shocking, because like after I have everything, all the material things, I want to look for the next high. I think all of us are kind of wired to have that in us, to look for something that kind of boosts our dopamine, makes us feel good. I think we all want that. And so I think it's about like, again, like becoming aware of that, breaking those cycles.
So true.
Yeah.
And then how can therapy support executive functioning, clarity, and emotional regulation, specifically in hobbyists?
I think again, like especially for hobbyists who come to therapy, you're going to kind of talk about why you're in this space, what's going on with you. And then you'll kind of find clarity in what that means for you. And I think through therapy, you can also redefine and create a new narrative for how the hobby is going to be in your life. I think for a lot of people who might be struggling with the hobby, I think they've lost themselves to the hobby. So if anything, the hobby has taken full narrative and you've become like a player in this game. However, you are the creator of the game, right? So we got to change that. Now you got to kind of regain a sense of yourself, then figure out like how the hobby fits into your life.
Right.
So I think it's finding clarity in that. I think going back to even like executive functioning, okay, let's kind of regain like what works for you. This goes back to like finding, again, like actionable steps to kind of help you find yourself again. Like, who are you outside of this hobby? Who were you before? What did you like about yourself? Okay, now can we marry who you've been before with the person you are in the hobby and kind of find like a good blend, a good harmonious marriage for you so that you can enjoy both things in your life.
A good answer. Yeah, I think therapy just does such a good job of helping people recognize that their worth isn't just tied to, what they produce or acquire.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know, when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself, talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Who they are, right? Yeah. And I love that point of sort of just taking a step back and evaluating who you were before you got into this craze of a hobby. The biggest, you know, the biggest thing is to make sure that you're not letting the hobby, you're not letting your hobby control you
and,
your identity and who you are as a person, right? It should be, it should be an extension of you. It should be like, you know, a layer, you know, something that you can lean on and go to when, you know, you're feeling stressed out or, you know, you want to escape, but it shouldn't be like an all and be all, just full on takeover of your life. And I think that it started to turn into that for a lot of people. So I want to talk about specifically sort of some of the different methods that you use in therapy, CBT, SFT, and value-based goals. So you use a blend of cognitive behavioral therapy, solution-focused therapy, and strength-based therapy. Can you walk us through sort of how that might look with a collector trying to curb impulsive behavior?
Yeah, I mean, I think CBT is so useful for all of us, whether we're in the collecting space or not. But for like a collector, let's just say, maybe you ruminate over a lot of these thoughts of like, oh, I'm going to, I'll win it next time. Or like, this is an investment for me, this makes sense. And you're like constantly trying to justify why you're doing this thing. And we kind of recognize that as cognitive distortions. Like, are they actually rooted in truth? Are you actually going to win it the next time? And like, or maybe you also have thoughts of like, oh, this is how I find value. This is how I find worth. I'm only valuable being in this space when I spend this kind of money because this is how people view me. Like all of these are probably like irrational thoughts. They're probably not based in truth. And so like CBT will help you identify some of these irrational, distorted thoughts. And then we'll work together to try to form like better, more, not positive, but challenge those thoughts and help you kind of form thoughts that actually serve you better. So we'll do that, like CBT, again, challenging negative, like distorted thoughts into more like positive thoughts that help you. And then like solution focused therapy, again, kind of like setting future goals and then figuring out how we can obtain that goal. And solution focused therapy is a little bit more, it's more short term. And so we're not, I mean, I guess we could look 5-10 years, but it's a little bit more future focused. And then we try to have like practical goals set for it. And then you said like value-based, which is like strength-based therapy. Yeah. I love focusing on that because I truly believe all my clients or even people in the hobby, everyone has a strength. Let's play on that. Right. Maybe, you know, like we're going to uncover these strengths, see like how you can help, how it can help you break some of these cycles that you've been engaging in.
Yeah, I like that.
Especially
Go ahead.
No, one last thing. I think especially because like when you're stuck in a cycle, you probably feel like I can't do it. I'm not capable. Maybe you're looking at the next person going like, oh, how come they can do it? Oh, actually, I think you can do it. It's just that the strength that you have, it's been kind of layered on with all these other things that has been going on. So again, with therapy, we're going to try to uncover all of that. Then use your strength to help you dig yourself out of this thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I think capitalizing on your biggest strengths and trying to find that parallel between how you can apply it to your growth and recovery is incredibly empowering. And if you can help people do that, it's a superpower because I think a lot of people just don't necessarily know how to use their strengths. You know, like somebody might be an incredible writer or extremely articulate, but they don't necessarily know how to apply that in sort of like a career setting to help them advance in their careers. So having like a therapist or a coach that can help you sort of draw those lines, I think is really, really powerful.
Yeah.
And then I had one more thought based on what you just said, but now it's of course escaping me. So I'm going to ask you the next question and I'll try to think of what I was going to ask you, but how do you guide clients in setting more immediate goals, like weekly goals or redefining success in healthier ways?
Well, I love redefining like words that we use every day. So again, like success, for example, how are you defining that now? Maybe I'm defining success as, oh, I look at this guy who's making like $50,000. Like that's success to me. Okay. But does that apply to yourself? If it doesn't, how do we redefine success to mean something for you? So again, that maybe success for you means, hey, in this week, I'm not going to rip, or I'm only going to spend an hour each day looking through cards. Okay. If that's success for you, then great. We're going to work on that. And then again, going back to these goals, right? Once we define what success looks like for you, we will break down those steps. Okay. How do we get you from looking at, I don't know, sorry, I keep going back to breaking, but I do think that's so accessible that people kind of just do on the phone. So like going back to breaking, it's kind of like TikTok, right? Like when we go in it, I think we get stuck. It's hard to get out. So the same thing here. Maybe you go on a breaking site or whatnot, I think is what it's called.
Yeah, whatnot. Fanatics,
Maybe you spend 5 hours a day on that. Well, okay, let's try to reduce that to 4 hours for the next 2 days. Then after the next 2 days, let's go to 3 hours. And then we kind of we'll work backwards together. And or like you're struggling. Okay, what is happening here? Oh, by the third hour, like I want to leave, but I can't. Okay, what's going on here? Let's identify what's going on. Let's try to work through that. Let's break those steps down. In that moment, I'm feeling a lot of anxiety. I feel like I can't pull away. Okay, can we call a friend or could we have somebody know that like, hey, I'm in a break right now. So can you keep me accountable? Like, again, I am all about setting big goals, but making really small steps to get there. Because again, I think we talked about this at the beginning, really small successes are going to help us make really big changes in the end.
Yeah, that's so well said. And, you know, you brought up a point like, you know, sort of reducing the behavior, right? Going from 5 hours on an app to maybe 1 hour. And I think that actually brings up a really good point or leads me to a topic sort of not on our agenda, but I feel like it's really important to mention, because in programs like Gamblers Anonymous through gambling recovery, the standard approach is full abstinence. That means no betting, no exceptions, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's often necessary because the nature of gambling doesn't allow for moderation.
Right.
It's high risk by design. But when it comes to collecting, it's a little bit different. It's not a one-to-one. And we're not here to preach abstinence across the board. Mm-hmm. Collecting itself isn't inherently harmful. In fact, I think for many people, it's a source of joy, connection, creativity, and nostalgia. We talk about that quite a bit. But with that said, there are layers to it. For some, the behaviors around collecting, especially in areas like live breaks or chasing big hits, can definitely mirror gambling so closely that full abstinence is what's needed.
Right.
And some people do need to walk away entirely, at least for a while, you know, to sort of reset and heal. But for others, it's about bringing more intention, clarity, and control into the hobby, learning to set boundaries, avoid triggers, and reconnect with the parts of collecting that feel healthy and meaningful. So Collectors MD makes space for both paths.
Yeah.
Whether you need to stop completely or simply reshape your relationship with the hobby, we want to support people, you know, and not shame them. So we're even going to get to a point where I think we're going to have to split our weekly meeting into two different sort of categories. One for people who need to walk away completely and, you know, just preach abstinence. And then another for people who, you know, are a little bit more reformed and maybe still want to be involved in the hobby to some extent, but want to do so before things get out of hand. You know, they might not necessarily have a problem yet, but they want to join this community to, you know, take self inventory on a regular basis and to proceed with caution and, you know, to make sure that they're fully educated so that they can see the warning signs before, you know, things start to spiral. Right. And I did remember one other thing, the one other thing that you had brought up, and I think that was sort of comparing yourself to other people.
Yeah.
I think it's really important, you know, to acknowledge and realize that everybody's situation is completely different financially, emotionally, and psychologically. So what feels, you know, what could feel like a small loss to one person might be a major setback for someone else. $100 isn't the same to everyone, right? So that's why I think comparing your collecting habits, spending, or recovery to someone else's doesn't necessarily serve you.
Right.
What matters is how you feel, what you can handle, and what boundaries you need to stay grounded. Your path is your own. And I'm sure you approach the each one of your clients, you know, sort of on a case-by-case basis.
Right. Yeah.
Not a one-size-fits-all, and the same thing applies to Collectors MD.
Yeah, so yeah.
We you know, want people to understand that, like, this isn't like a cookie cutter approach where every single tool and resource that we have to offer is going to fit every single person.
Right.
But, you know, if you come to us with intention and you know, with the right intentions and with an open mind, we can work with you to help figure out what your path looks like. So, so I want to bring up your blog post, which I read, really well written, by the way. And I think it's interesting because we write a daily reflection. We haven't missed a day since March 25th when we...
I also was going to say, that's very impressive. I did look through it. I was like, wow.
Appreciate you saying that. I'd love to take your blog post and potentially repurpose it into a daily reflection if you'd be open to that.
Yeah.
But you talk about, you know, the power of defining words like confidence or patience. So how can we apply that to collecting? For example, what does intentional collecting or balance actually mean to someone?
So I love that you brought that up. And so I think it goes back to each person. And you mentioned that right before you brought the blog post up about how it's about catering it to what you need. And so I wrote that blog post because a lot of my sessions with my clients, they would say stuff like, oh, like this person is doing really well. Like this person is so confident. But again, like, what do you mean? How are you describing their confidence? And then when we broke it down, I was like, is that truly what you want to be? Maybe the way you define confidence is very different. However, you adopted someone else's confidence and you started comparing that version of confidence to yourself. And maybe that's something you actually don't want to achieve. And so going back to, like you said, with the collectors and the collecting space, you said intentional. Sorry, what was the word that you said? Intentional.
Intentional collecting. Intentional collecting or balance.
Okay. We have to redefine that. Again, balance, what looks like balance to me might look very different for you. So again, what does that look like? What do you want to achieve? What does balance look like for you? Maybe balance looks like for me on a weekend, on a Saturday afternoon, I get to go to a show and enjoy that time. But then the rest of the week, I'm going to focus on other things that make me happy. Maybe that's balance to me. For somebody else, balance could mean complete abstinence, right? Going back to like, this is a place I really struggle with. I can't even touch that. The balance looks like, hey, I can't do this, but I got to go invest my time in other things that used to make me happy. So I think each person has to define what that balance looks like. Also, like intentional spending. What does that look like?
Right.
So again, like really breaking down the characteristics of each word and applying it to you. And that goes back to comparing too. I think, again, we compare so much that a lot of the words that we define has come from other people. So now we want to come back to defining it for you, making it work for you. So then this also goes back to like strength-based therapy. Why I love that so much is that we're not trying to reinvent the wheel here. We're actually just trying to dig up things you already have, that you already possess, And then trying to use that to help you live the most fulfilling, grounded, authentic life. And so this goes, again, going back to defining words. We're going to define these words that already kind of live inside you, but now we're going to make it real, like speak it out loud so that you can try to live that authentic, like, version of yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. So well said. I know we are coming up on time here, so we have two more segments that we can quickly go through, and then we have my favorite part of the show, which is the rapid fire questions, where I ask four to five questions, and you just answer whatever comes to you first. So we'll get there. But before that, I do want to touch on something that you mentioned.
Time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
In your profile. You mentioned, as a Korean American therapist, you also understand the cultural expectations and stigma that and the work you do, or how you work with your clients to navigate those sort of things. And so for me, you know, this topic hits close to home. I haven't told you this about me, but my wife is Indian and her parents immigrated to the US. So I've seen firsthand how cultural values, expectations, and even silence around mental health can shape someone's relationship to things like stress, success, and self-worth. Right. So as a Korean American therapist, I imagine, you know, you've seen how cultural context plays a huge role in how people cope or don't. I think for many hobbyists who come from, immigrant or high pressure family systems, there's often this unspoken pressure to always achieve, provide, or succeed. And I think that pressure can often lead to things like guilt, shame, or a sense of failure when someone feels a little bit out of control with their spending, collecting, or mental health. But those things or those feelings are rarely talked about openly. So how do you see cultural identity showing up in the room with your clients? And what advice do you have for someone navigating those inner conflicts while trying to get help?
I feel like you said it really well. I think the biggest thing, I mean, especially in like Korean American, like Asian American cultures, you don't really learn to speak about your emotions. And I think a lot of Asian Americans, especially Korean Americans, like some of the emotions that you are very comfortable with would be just be like happiness, sadness, and anger. But there's such a variety of emotions that we experience every day. And so in therapy, we kind of, again, work through that. Okay, I'm feeling angry. Okay. Anger is a feeling, but like, what are you also feeling beneath that? Oh, maybe I'm feeling a lot of shame, a lot of guilt. I feel incompetent. I feel unworthy. And so, you know, being Korean American, working with Korean American clients, I think I kind of help them break through that, like help them become more vulnerable and comfortable in sharing what they're going through unfiltered. Because again, also, and I think this happens also in like Indian cultures, like a lot of the things that we present, they're filtered. And I think even in Indian culture too, like a Korean American, Korean culture, it's a lot about like respecting elders, like understanding like things that you can say, can't say. And so again, I think those things sometimes with like hold us back from being really honest with what's going on. And I do think that also, again, happens in the hobby space, right? Like you're not being truly honest with what's going on. Maybe you're feeling all these like uncomfortable emotions, but all you're doing is just suppressing them. And so how does it present? Maybe you're starting to actually get sick all the time. You're getting like muscle aches all the time. You're getting headaches all the time. Well, all these things I think are also signs that like you're holding a lot of stress, anxiety, pressure.
Sure. So,
yeah. And honestly, because being Korean American, a lot of my Asian American clients have found me because they wanted somebody who could understand the cultural pressures. And so I love providing that for my clients. And And I think that also goes with like compassionate care. Like I bring compassion, understanding that like, hey, you had to kind of suppress a lot of these things because culturally this is what was expected of you.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, you know, this topic really resonates with me just because, you know, I've seen firsthand, you know, my wife's family and how she sort of interacts with her parents and how there are some cultural differences. And I can only imagine, you know, what it would be like to, you know, be in a position where there are all of these external pressures beyond what we typically see or might experience, you know, from American parents, you know, and then sort of navigate that. So I think it's, again, just really unique that you're able to bring that perspective to your clients. And I'm sure you help so many people sort of navigate that. So shifting over to our last segment, applying therapy to the hobby, what advice would you give a collector who's wondering, is this a problem for me?
I think if you're asking that question, maybe you should just go, you know, like your space, just check it out. If you're already having that question, maybe something inside your inner voice is telling you, hey, maybe we should investigate this a little bit more. And again, like you said, you're trying to provide a space where there is no judgment. Right. And so if you're asking yourself, is this a problem? Am I, you know, is this working for me? I would just go into a safe space like yours and just ask and just see, okay, am I struggling with some of these problems that are coming up in these groups or what other people are sharing? And so I think it just starts there. That simple question maybe is an indicator that, again, maybe you don't have a problem, but don't you just want to kind of know, like, is this an issue? And all that answer could, I mean, that question can be answered very simply if you just do a little bit of like searching, talking to
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. I think, yeah, if you're asking yourself, is there a problem with me, or you're starting to second guess, it doesn't necessarily mean that you need to go see a therapist or you need to be diagnosed with some sort of, you know, mental illness or disorder. That's not what we're saying. But again, it's all about just proceeding with caution and making sure that you're making intentional choices. So I actually think if you're asking yourself these sort of questions, it's a healthy sign. You're taking self-inventory and you're asking the right questions. And you know, we really want to express that Collectors MD isn't necessarily just for people who have addiction or who have a problem. You know, it can be for people who are totally fine and doing great and, you know, super successful, but just want to be a part of a movement and a community that is all about positive self-growth and helping other people see things with more clarity. So with that, how do you help people navigate sort of these gray areas where collecting is still something they want in their life, but they don't know that, you know, they don't necessarily know or understand that it started to hurt them? This is something that I struggle with, and we talked about it briefly, you know, about these sort of layers and the two different categories, with some people needing to abstain completely and others who want to, you know, still collect and, you know, do so just with more intention. But it is, at the end of the day, it is a slippery slope, especially as it pertains to spending. And I think, you know.
Sorry, go ahead. I think all of us want to live in the gray area. I don't think it's good to live on any ends of the extreme. So kind of being like scientific, I think maybe you have to find some data points for yourself. So for example, like something like TikTok that is meant to be highly addictive. I'm not saying you can't go on it. However, I'm sure there's a moment that passes where it goes from being enjoyable to like, I feel like I'm stuck in this thing. Like now it feels really sticky. I don't feel good. Let's actually figure out how much time it takes for you to do that. It could be like setting a timer, like when you are in the hobby space or like you're enjoying this thing. Okay, is there a shift that happens where you start realizing I'm not really enjoying it, but I feel stuck here and I feel like I can't stop? Becoming more clear about certain changes also in your emotional state, your physical state, I think those are really important to notice, recognize, become aware of, so that you can also set very clear boundaries for yourself. Again, maybe that means like an hour a day you get to kind of spend like enjoying the hobby in whatever form you like. However, past the hour, you realize that's when you get into really like dark, like negative patterns. Okay, well, yeah. Now that we know, like you can set very clear boundaries for yourself. Once that hour hits, you're going to have to go do something else. And I think the more you kind of build up this resilience in some way, you get to enjoy it more freely, more relaxed. But I think initially, if you're going to work through that, figuring out what the gray area looks like for you, you have to be a little bit more regimented.
Yeah, 100%. I think setting those clear boundaries are so incredibly important. Things like setting a monthly budget, creating filters for yourself, deciding what types of items that you will allow yourself to buy or collect versus those that you won't. Unfollowing certain triggers that lead to impulse buying, maybe like certain breakers or platforms that you follow on Instagram or TikTok, you might need to just take a break from for a little while. You don't even have to unfollow them. You could just mute them so you're feeling that sense of FOMO. And then, of course, taking breaks is so incredibly important when it starts to feel overwhelming. Because at the end of the day, I think boundaries just really protect your joy, like you said. Yeah. And I think you hit the nail on the head as far as, some people just start to spiral at certain hours of the day or night. For me, that's something that I would struggle with quite a bit, where I'd have a really good day, everything, went smoothly. I accomplished maybe a handful of small goals that I had. And then by the end of the evening, I'm exhausted. I get into bed and I'm kind of just like mindlessly scrolling. And next thing I know, I'm on Whatnot and I see an auction for, a team in a break for a new product that is enticing. And I mindlessly click bid. I end up getting dealt a bad team. And next thing I know, I'm like full tilt. And that's how a lot of the spiraling begins.
Yeah.
When you're in your most vulnerable and sort of subconscious state.
Right.
And so we just have to be really, really mindful about that, about those things, and make sure that we are protecting ourselves ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And so things like Gamban, which is an app blocking software company that we partnered with recently, that allows you to download this software and basically block apps from your phone. So if you feel like you can't go on Whatnot, but you can still collect, you can still buy your cards on eBay, singles at shows, whatever the case may be, but you can't join breaks and you can't be on Whatnot, block yourself from that. Like, then you don't even have to worry about like the mental fatigue that will come with driving trying yourself nuts during the day. Yeah. Actively. Yeah. Like, cause for me, it's like, I'm paranoid that like the subconscious version of myself at night is just going to start buying impulsively.
Right.
And, the next day I'm going to wake up with a whole ton of regret. So it's all about like just protecting yourself from yourself.
I love that. Yeah. And setting up like, like before it even happens, you're setting up kind of like protection, like you're padding that.
Exactly.
Right. I love that. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. One last question on this topic, and then we'll get into the rapid fire questions. What does a therapeutic reset look like for someone in this space?
I think, like you said, maybe taking a break. I mean, maybe you need like a week, a day, a month, but I think that would look like a therapeutic rest. Maybe it's also taking a step away from Instagram or Whatnot or TikTok, wherever you usually kind of spend your time, like you said, late at night when you want to de-stress and you kind of click that app. Like, maybe you need to delete it for a few weeks, days, hours, whatever, right? Again, dependent on what you need. But I think those can all look like therapeutic rest. Also, it could just mean like going back to things you used to enjoy before you discover the hobby. What did you like? Like going to a show, watching a live game, going to the park, spending time with a friend you haven't reached out to. Let's do all of that. Those are all rests.
Yeah. Being in the moment, I think, is so important too. I think a lot of these activities and behavior forces us to be sort of distant and not enjoy the moment. You know, I always say, like, if I lived in a different era where technology wasn't a thing, we didn't have, you know, super computers as devices for phones, I would have never gone down, you know, this dark path, because I wouldn't, it wouldn't have been accessible. So I think it's really important, you know, taking that step back, gaining clarity on why you collect in the first place, identifying some of these triggers that we talked about, and just overall creating healthier habits so that, you know, collecting this childhood rooted activity that we all know and love feels fulfilling and not compulsive. So, okay. So we're going to get into these rapid fire questions now. So again, just short answers, whatever comes to your mind first. So what's one thing you wish more people knew about therapy?
It's not scary. Also, it's not like when you have a big issue. I actually think that the most like satisfying and rewarding work that I do with my clients are when they come in and they just kind of want to just talk first. They don't really actually have an idea what they want to discuss. And then we just start kind of talking. It's very organic, kind of like what we're doing now. And then it kind of starts unearthing certain things. So also therapy is just a great place to be in, where someone isn't judging you, and you get to be fully transparent. They actually have no idea also who you are. They don't know anything about your past. And so it's just really refreshing to meet somebody for the first time. And you get to kind of share the version of yourself that you are now. Sure. Because again, when we do that with our friends or family members, they kind of already have an idea of who we are. They might have some biases, but with therapy, you don't have that. And again, you just have somebody who's like willing to listen. And that is really refreshing.
100%. Yeah, I think people are just a little bit intimidated. There's like kind of a stepping stone when it comes to seeking help, seeking therapy. Mm. People are afraid to admit, maybe I need help. Maybe I need support. Maybe I have a problem. But then once you're there, I think it's so relieving and refreshing, like you said, to be able to talk to somebody who has professional expertise and experience, who will show you unbiased empathy, which I think is incredibly impactful. So I highly encourage people who may feel like they need it, or maybe they've been thinking about it and just haven't taken that step, to explore your options, because those resources are out there and they're there to help you. Okay. So next question, what would you say to someone who's feeling burnt out, ashamed, or lost in the hobby, but doesn't know where to start?
Maybe therapy can be really scary. So joining a group like yours, maybe anonymously first, just to kind of listen to what other people are going through. I think that could be a great start. Maybe also sharing with just one person that you trust. Hey, I'm like kind of going through this. I'm not exactly sure what I'm experiencing here, but I do know like I'm struggling in this space. And you don't have to be fully honest. You're not ready, but you're opening up the door slightly. And that's allowing somebody to keep you accountable to slowly start supporting you. So I start there. One more thing, maybe journaling, writing things down. Hey, what is going on? Maybe again, you're afraid to join a group like yours, or you're afraid to like talk to somebody. Well, then talk to yourself first. When's the last time you actually asked yourself, hey, like what's going on with you? What are you struggling with? Maybe start there.
I love that. Those are all really, really great pointers. And I couldn't agree more. I don't have anything else to say there. Okay, two more. How can our community better support one another in this journey?
I think something like this, maybe asking somebody that you know in the community, hey, how are you doing? I don't know how often that's being asked, but not about like, hey, what did you collect? What did you think about the rip? But really asking, hey, how are you doing?
Yeah.
Right. Maybe it just starts there.
Just looking out for each other. You know, it's so important. Like I always say, I started Collectors MD because I needed it. Mm. But the gratification that I get from helping other people, having conversations with people who have the same lived experiences that I do, there's nothing more rewarding than that. And, you know, I'm not saying do this because it's a selfish act and it'll make you feel good, but looking out for your neighbor, looking out for your peers is just so incredibly important, because you never know what somebody is going through behind closed doors. Yeah. So many people just have felt so alone and isolated, especially in this hobby. And I can't tell you how many people have just come to me and said, like, thank you so much for starting this, because I no longer feel alone. You know, and one thing I learned early on is that we can't heal alone. We have to heal in group. We have to heal in community. And so that's so important. Okay. Last question. Where can people reach you?
My website, I think that's shared on your platform, or
it is in the comments below.
It's in the, do I need to put that in, or?
No, I already
added it. So on my website, that's probably the easiest way to reach me. You can also just Google my name, so Thai Kim Therapy, and there should be a few sites where you can, you know, reach out to me. And like another thing is, like, maybe again, you're not ready to start therapy or like dive in to talk to somebody weekly, but you can also reach out just to ask, like, hey, I'm struggling with this. Do you have an idea of like what I can do? I can also give like short pointers that you can try. And honestly, I got into this field, I got into therapy because I do love building relationships. So if you have anything, you just want to connect, you can reach out. So
amazing.
Yeah,
we're definitely going to start telling people, especially in California, to or encourage them to reach out to you. We can have a conversation after the episode about how we can sort of integrate that into our platform and the website and everything like that. So I think, this has been incredibly helpful. And I think a lot of our listeners and members of our community will find great value in reaching out to you.
Yeah, and thank you so much for giving me this platform to speak.
It was thank really you for joining me. Yeah. Truly appreciate it, Ty. Like, this was such a important and you know, impactful conversation. I think a lot of people will be able to, you know, just connect with a lot of the things that we talked about. And, you know, my hopes is that, you know, the more content like this that we pull out, where we put out, the more it'll resonate, and, you know, ultimately we're able to spread this message to the broader community and become a mainstay, not just in the sports card and TCG hobby, but all collecting verticals for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
So thank you so much again for joining us. That's going to do it for today's episode of the Collector's Compass. Taya, it was an absolute pleasure. We really appreciate you joining and sharing your perspective, not just as a therapist, but as someone who truly understands the emotional and psychological layers that so many collectors are navigating. Your insight and your presence today were incredibly grounding, and I know our listeners will take away a lot from this conversation. So, like we just said, if you'd like to learn more about Taya's work, you can visit her website. She has two links, which are in the description below, or you can find her on Psychology Today. Actually, that is one of the links.
Or just Google. You can Google
her. Yeah. Taya Kim, DAYAE, Kim, KIM, Therapy. She also offers free 15-minute consultation calls for anyone interested in just exploring therapy a little bit further. As always, if you or someone you know is struggling with compulsive collecting, overspending, or the mental toll of the hobby, we invite you to join our weekly Collectors MD peer support meetings. They're every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. They're completely free, they're anonymous, and it's a safe space to just show up exactly as you are. So thank you again for tuning in. As always, collect with intention, not compulsion, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.